Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011. Look at the World Cup with Squidge. Let's go back. Oh baby, let's go back with Squidge.
Hello and welcome once again to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective Podcast, a podcast which is now something like 12, 13 episodes in and should really be getting used to the name of the podcast by now. I should probably be able to say it. My name is Robbie or Squidge or whatever you want to call me. I am joined today, as ever, by
Will Owen, who, again, I should have a more creative name, but that's still just my name.
Just change it, yeah. Just change it. Just dive in.
Yeah.
And honoured to be joined by, from YouTube itself, the one and only Mr. Gareth Mason. How are we doing?
Hello, guys. No, very well. Thank you very much for having me on your podcast. Honoured to be here.
No, thank you for being here. We're excited to have you. Excited to try and walk as tall as G-Man himself. To try and...
You know. Thank you.
So, yeah, to begin, the game today is South Africa's 49-3 win over Fiji from the 2011 World Cup. To begin with that, Gareth, as a South African fan, as if anyone hasn't seen your stuff or worked it out, you like the Springboks, I think it's safe to say that.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit, you know. You keep on the quiet. How do you look back on this World Cup on 2011? What are your main memories as a Springboks fan of it?
Not very good, to be honest. I thought we had a great team. I only have two words, Bryce Lawrence, unfortunately. sorry, I have to bring it up.
Yeah.
The scar that's still going with us even so many years, 9 years later, can you believe it? But look, it was a good World Cup. I do have good memories because of the squad that we had. And we had our moments. The game before that, I think it was Wales or something.
Yeah.
We didn't look as hot. But this game, I think we came back quite strongly. And even against Australia, there were moments of class in and behind Bryce Lawrence. But I think South Africa were really going at it and hyping it because we were defending champs. So down here, the vibe was very positive. But it was also a little bit negative because this was the first time our jersey didn't have the Springbok and it was thrown to the sleeve. So there was still quite a bit of controversy on that. Not many people wanted to actually buy that World Cup jersey, which was the first because it didn't have that Springbok due to the whole political drama and crap that we had back then. But we've come a long way since. But it was a good World Cup. But yeah, Bryce Lawrence unfortunately highlights that one for me.
It's amazing how often, even after 2019, after, I don't know if you remember this, but last year you won a World Cup. Tell you what, if Wales had won that World Cup, there wouldn't be a second I wouldn't have thought about it since. It would have been every thought of every meal I'd have eaten, I'd have just gone, Alan Wynne-Jones. Just, you know, imagining, I don't know, Rhys Patchell's winning drop goal at the end or whatever happens in my head.
I'm just going to remind you now, Robbie, that we didn't win the World Cup last year. South
Wait,
Africa
what?
Did. do you plan to say it again,
dream,
guys?
Man can dream.
Yeah.
So I'm amazed how often Bryce Lawrence still comes up. That scar runs properly deep in South Africa.
Massive.
Yeah.
I saw Bryce actually the other day. I think he's still quite involved with New Zealand refereeing or something like that. And we came across him the other day and I was actually shocked to see him actually still doing something. Because, I mean, our media went out for him. We have a radio guy who's known for pranking people. And I mean, he phoned Bryce in the middle of the mornings in New Zealand time. Bryce Lawrence lasted long. And like I said, if we go back to 2011, that's probably the first thing someone will say to you if you're talking to a South African. But yeah, that definitely stuck with us. Look, it's our great. It's past. It happened.
Yeah.
But it definitely still is a memory. I mean, the All Blacks still had their moments of greatness, and I think they might have still won even if we were close by them. But we'll never know, and that's the thing at the end of the day that happens.
Yeah.
There's still a way to go past Australia. Yes. So it's not like we would have won the World Cup because of Bryce Lawrence doing that. You just don't know.
Yeah. Of course, with Welsh fans, there's always a bit hurt with the whole Alan Rowland thing as well, with the Sam Warburton red card. Of course, the thing is, it's a difficult one because I think we've come to accept that nowadays that is a red card, you know. Stuff like, obviously, we'll come up with this, you know, as and when. But I suppose that to an extent, we share the same hurt of how this World Cup finished, that there was an easy scapegoat in terms of that. And as you say, it's what happened, you know. But it's difficult to come to terms with, isn't it? So
It's amazing that I think the Australians are the only set of fans that don't think they would have won that World Cup if not for X. And I think a lot of Welsh fans go, well, if it wasn't a red card, we would have won that World Cup. And I hold we wouldn't. I hold New Zealand would have won it. And then, you know, South African fans, they have the Bryce Lawrence thing keeps coming. And again, as you say, it's not necessarily would have won the World Cup, but a semi-final and suddenly who knows from there.
The squad, there's not to conceal those big names were in that team. So they had it, but we'll just never know. But move on, I suppose. We've already got another World Cup, so...
Yes, exactly. You've got to be content with that.
Should we see how many times you can mention that throughout the course of this episode?
I think the other thing about this Springbok team, as you say, it's a really strong side, and it's largely the team that had been the best team in the world end of 2 years earlier, in 2009, when they beat the All Blacks home and away for the first time in some time. They obviously won that Lions series. They were just completely dominant over everyone they played, except for Ireland. Yeah. They pretty much dominated everyone for about 18 months. They were comfortably the best team in the world until New Zealand kind of reappeared and reemerged a bit just in the lead up to this World Cup. So it's interesting when you look at that, you know, the squad they took to the World Cup, it was mostly a combination of the players that had just won the World Cup 4 years earlier and then these new players they brought through ahead of that Lions tour in 2009.
Yeah, fully. And to watch those guys grow from 2007, like Frans Steyn, I mean, he was like a youngster who became a hero. And now all these guys that were a bit young are now more senior and got experience in that position. And they definitely developed. So when you look at that squad of quality players, you definitely look back at the strength of how these guys did and what they built. And I think that was one of the things that Peter de Villiers got as coach was he's just got Jake Whiteside. Can we really give him credit for those dominant years? But, I mean, he still has to, you know, you've got your good players that will stay great and help you, but you've got to be able to keep them there, keep them happy, fit, motivated, and all that jazz. So, you know, I've got nothing against it, but I think they came a long way and grew. And from a squad on paper, I mean, the likes of Victor's, Farida Priya's, Mornay's, I mean, they're regarded as greats now. So it's just quality squad, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's funny you should bring up Frans Steyn because I'm not sure if he really knew about this, but he actually went on to win a second World Cup with South Africa 12 years later as well in 2019. So
I couldn't remember that one.
He went from the youngest man to win a World Cup to the most surprisingly fat yet effective outside back to win a World Cup. I love his evolution.
I think it was a surprise for everyone that he was back.
Yeah.
And I mean, he mainly sat there on the bench half the time, so keeping the guys healthy and fit with the water boy. But that seems to be a good role these days. If you look at Super Rugby, you've got Dan Carter, your water boy. I mean, it's quality.
Yeah.
But Stanky was good and he grew up into it. So 2011 for me just matured more. I'm not saying he was mature then. But
Should we pick up on something then at the start of the game, speaking of Frans Steyn? Because he does come in and kick a goal from my front room. Like he comes somehow, takes the run up from my bedroom, you know, like run through the house and then run to the flat. And then nails it right the way through the post over in New Zealand. Like, it's a properly,
to be honest. No,
it's a properly like it's what, like 58 meters or something? Ridiculous.
It's insane.
Yeah, and especially
I don't know how he does it.
Like, Mornay Staines missed one basically in front of the post earlier on already. And then Franz Dane comes in and just, but no, this is how you do it. And like, I did just write it in my notes. Here he is as he steps up to take it. Completely short. Of course he's getting it. Of course he's getting it. Yeah, it's Franz Dane.
And that's the thing, because weirdly, I think looking at it, I felt more confident that he was going to get that kick than I felt about Mornay Staines' first one that he missed. Yeah. I felt more confident about him knocking that over from 60 yards on the angle than a very good kicker, probably a 90% kicker in Mornay Staines, getting a much simpler kick, you know?
That's a very good point. With Staines, I mean, with Mornay, actually, even, he was actually pretty brilliant at his kicking. So we got so used to Staines being our go-to man for the further kick. So automatically, our attitudes when we watch these games, it's like, now go Staines. Past that 50, you can at least do it. Mornay came as a surprise at certain things, so... Yeah, it was lucky to have a player like that at that time too. Yeah. Those 58-meter kicks.
Yes. I also enjoyed this kind of era of Franz Staines, having had obviously early young Franz Staines, you know, who was just like enormously confident, and an old Franz Staines who was, his hairline was going and enjoying the pies. But still, you know, effective at either end. And in the middle, you have this weird like disco perm Franz Staines with this kind of, he looks like Maureen's gone out for the disco club and she's got her hair done special, you know, in order to go out and play bingo on a Saturday night.
But instead she's playing inside centre.
Yeah. Instead she's walloping kicks from the team hotel in his slippers.
His transformation has been very interesting over the years. And I suppose he could be remembered as that as well, with the looks and the sizes. Because, I mean, when he started in 2007, he was thin, like stick type chap. And he just got bigger and bigger and developed. As he grew.
He started his Springbok career as a winger, didn't he, as well? And that's unthinkable to think at the end of his career.
Yeah, and he moved around quite a lot. I mean, I remember him for the Sharks. He was a solid young kid. And we all thought at one point, even though he's got a little bit of height on him, he's too small or he's too skinny thin and he's going to get flattened. And yet he actually bulked up quite nicely and became, even with his size, at that younger age too. He was brilliant in all formats. And I think his attitude within the game, it's quite serious and to the point, definitely helped him develop and grow as a player.
Yeah. And just look at the rest of that Springboks team. You've got a very young Pat Lambie in a fullback, slots in. Exactly. Just in South Africa, kind of going for absolutely maximum distributors, which I enjoyed. I liked seeing a Springbok team this brutal, chuck the ball around and pass it as much as they did.
And I'll tell you what, some of their pack are pretty underrated as distributors as well. Like Hein Brosseau and Scott Berger, they could pass the ball.
So I never thought of Schalkberger as a distributor, but this game, it reminded me of, there was a game a few years ago when Bastereau came into the France team and just started throwing mad 30-meter miss balls all the time. Like, no, you're Matthew Bastereau, what are you doing? You're supposed to slowly crash it up the middle on your way to the pie shop. I've used pies a lot today. But Schalkberger was, coming in and throwing these miss passes and distributing. He was brilliant. In a different in a brilliant way to the way I'm used to him being brilliant.
Yeah.
I fully agree with you. I mean, when even watching any game with Skulk, when he passed the ball, you got quite shocked because you're so used to him banging his blonde locks at the time in any form of player when he was passing the ball. I think even the opponents get shocked and not sure what to do, and then all of a sudden things happen. So I agree that the passing side is definitely interesting.
And I suppose on the exact opposite end of the hair spectrum, I want to touch on the first try scored by the one and only Gerfro Steinkamp, who I remember during this World Cup, myself and the esteemed Mr. William Owen, I assume he's not your dad as well, Gareth. Though, frankly, if he's in South Africa, that'd explain where he's been the last few years. So, anyway, I remember him during the World Cup mishearing Gerfro Steinkamp's name as Jeffro Defkamp. And ever since, I have called him Jeffro Defkamp.
He will always be Jeffro Defkamp in our household.
Which I love his
name.
He's
a brute, that egg.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Because he's a scary-looking man. Like, he is the man who, no matter what, even pre-COVID, you cross the street to avoid.
I agree. I mean, I remember his first game. one of the blue teams, I think it was Uruguay, and what was the one of the teams he played against, and we thumped this team. And the one guy tried to tackle him as he was about to score a try, and literally he ran, went straight into the guy and straight down. It was like a proper brick wall trying to tackle. And that's a fond memory of Gutter, the way he just rooted through players and was terrifying to look at. And that nickname that you guys got now, I mean, that makes complete sense.
And that is kind of his finish. It's really brutal, but it's a really good finish. It's like watching Jonah Lomu, only scarier. It's like watching a Lomu or Nemanja Ndolo or something who, you know, properly crashes over. Like, two men go in to tackle him. They can't. One arm out, lunge, ball down. You know, like the cinematic at the beginning of like an EA Sports rugby game. I expect him to be really pixelated as he's grounding the ball.
So true.
The other notable thing about that period as well, in the lead up to the, I think it was the second try, just on the prop front as well, is Yanni Duplessis, the prop / paediatrician, who takes an up and under the bouncers. He takes it. He like basically steps someone. Then it takes four men attempt to tackle him before they get him to ground.
And he probably steps two players as well.
Yeah.
It's not like, he's got a nice little swerve on him. It's not like he just bumps them out of the way in a similar way to Gotthard Steenkamp did. Like, he fully sidesteps, but two Fijian players.
I think that shocked a lot of people even down here in South Africa, the way the man moved. Because, I mean, he had his moments of class, and then he had his odd moments where I think discipline got him. But that was definitely one to remember.
I still look at him and think, that man's a paediatrician. Like, I'm sure he's a very good one, but he doesn't look the part.
Just imagine being one of his patients and looking at this bloke and go, how does this picture fit with him?
There's a game to be played of taking rugby players and the least likely profession they could fit into. So, you know, like,
any other of those you can draw
like,
up.
Okay, so go for a Steenkamp and Weather Girl.
Make it happen.
Yeah. Get him in a skirt.
That's an image. That's an odd image.
Somebody's going to tweet you that in the morning.
Oh, that's coming. That's coming. Yeah. I look forward
Somebody's
to it.
Somebody's going to Photoshop that. That's going to exist in 24 hours' time.
I mean, to be honest with you, with the whole doctor talk of Yanni, I mean, a lot of people got confused and swapped the job lines of Bismarck being the doc and Yanni being like the farmer type, because he comes across as a laid back, can have a beer with all that stuff. You just don't see him as a doc. And I think it was my dad who eventually saw, okay, no, wait, it's Yanni. No, this doesn't look right, but okay, good for you.
That reminds me, so about this period, I was convinced that Mourney and Francois Steen were brothers.
Yeah. And I only learned they weren't about a year ago.
Yeah, I learned it a few years ago.
Even as a South African, I thought that too for a short period of time.
Yeah.
That they were related.
Why was it? Why did everyone think? Was it just because they both had huge boots and that was enough? That's all it takes to go. That's, of course, the most genetic bit.
It seems to be a thing, Dania, because even with Andre Venter, if we go back a few years past that, I mean, and AJ Fenton, both guys, one played for the Sharks, one played for the Free States, both played for the Springboks. Everyone thought these two were brothers. And it was for a long, long time until internet gets a bit more updated and then we could see that they're actually not. And it's it's something similar like that with Mornay and Francois. I mean, they're both Afrikaans chaps. I don't know, maybe it's a bit of that and then it's Steen and Steen. I think it's automatically you see two surnames in a team and you automatically put them through. If you look at the histories of families like in cricket, the War Brothers and all that stuff. I mean, they don't really look alike, but I must say we all thought they were related to for a short period of time.
I think they look just enough alike that if somebody told you they're related, you'd believe it.
Yeah.
As much as it gets. Point. Yeah, I had the same thing like with Duncan and Adam Jones, the props who played for Wales. Both had the hair bears. Both had long hair. One of them was blonde and one of them was black hair. But like, regardless, people just thought, oh, they must be related because they've got the same haircut. And they're both props.
I remember listening to, towards the end of their career, like one of the last few games of the Ospreys together, an Irish pundit, I forget who it was, repeatedly calling them the Jones brothers. It's like, if it was earlier on, I'd let it off. But also, if you're looking at a Welsh team and thinking, God, they're both called Jones, they must be related. Yeah. You're adding up the entire 15.
Yeah, there's about three families in the Welsh national team.
Exactly. How come Davis is playing with 14 brothers? We have six names between us, and I feel honestly quite proud to have the sixth most common. Yeah. every now and again, you know, like we have the odd thing that doesn't fit into the family names, like Nick Tompkins, obviously proudly Welsh, but not.
Or Faletau, not for example.
I was about to say Faletau is a traditional Welsh name. That's where my joke is going. But thank you. Navidi as well, traditional Welsh name. Tipperick.
Yeah.
All of them. Especially Faletau. okay, so I also will throw up just on, because we're talking about props, and I think it's nice to stay on props. The scrum. So basically, you've got a look on your face. Why don't you talk about it?
It was very one-sided come the second half, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Particularly, I mean, Geoffrey Stancamp did a very good job of shoring up the Fijians, but like by the time they were battered and the beast came on, every single scrum that Fiji had went against the head. And like, you know that your scrum is dominant when you can pick the ball up from a number eight and on the same phase, your props can be carrying the ball. Like, that's how dominant it was. It was one where I think it was, the beast ended up carrying the ball off the back of PSB's picking and going. Like, that's how dominant it was on the opposition ball as well.
Yeah. Well, so Fiji have a scrum in the last minute in their own 22 and the box properly go for it and shove them off it. It's like watching the Georgian pack scrummage against children. Like, they chase it so hard.
And I think that, I wouldn't want to with the Fiji. I mean, I still think they're quite a talented team and have a lot of potential. But you don't see that often against a Fiji team that is normally known as brute strengths to fight back and go in the scrum. So that was good to see some strong movement from the box and the beast getting it through to Spies. So it's definitely a improvement. And against that Fiji team for me is quite solid to remember.
Yeah, and it is. As we mentioned it before, but that South African pack is absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
And, you know, so Victor Matfield doesn't play, but in comes Dani Rousseau, who's, again, even more brutal and just as able, well, not just as able because Victor Matfield's one of the best locks of all time, but, you know, a very, very good international standard lock. Like, even where they went down to second choice players, they were still, it's a very strong team.
Bakis Borta goes off half time. Bring on Willem Albert and Francois Lowe plays even a stint in the second row. Like, that's the extent of their strength and depth within this one game. It's insane.
I think we're going back to Daniel. So a lot of people, he didn't get much of the credit that I think he deserved because of the competition that South African rugby had with the depth more than the competition. Because even when he played for the Bulls, you still got Victor and Bucky's boy to take the limelight in a team like the Bulls, especially when they come back. Then they had their moments when the Springboks train and all that. So for me, I think he might have had a lot more to offer because certain people, you either liked him or you didn't. There was a lot of people who were quite critical of old Dani Rousseau, but for me, he got better with age, which is unfortunate in a way because if he got stronger at a younger age, could have been much better. From that point, but good player still.
Yeah, and it's easy to get lost in because, like, quite often you get one of these utility forwards. Obviously, Rousseau could play anywhere from 4 to 8, you know, in the pack. Often a lot of these players kind of just get shoveled away and just thought, oh, have him on the bench in case someone gets injured, sort of thing. But no, he could come in, and as you're saying, Robbie, earlier, like, he could do almost as good a job as Matfield, which, he properly made a name for himself. He's such a good player.
Yeah. And his finish on his try towards the... I think it is the last try, isn't it? Where he hits a lovely line and dives really early. In a way, I was having this conversation with someone else before about how useful it is. I was on the Under the Sticks podcast the other week, and I was saying that how useful it is having a winger come in to try and finish from 1 inch out. And actually, he has that kind of instinct of, like, that's the finish of someone who knows how to finish at the end rather than a forward crashing over the line. Which normally, you know, they're dragging someone with them and it's kind of an afterthought getting the ball down rather than being, no, this is my job, I'm going to get the ball down. It's a very good finish, like Jeffro Defcamp's in the first half, which is a sensational finish from a loose head.
Should we just finish off on the second try as well, the Jacques Ferry's try?
Yes.
So we've talked about Johnny Duplessis' break, but the handling to then set that up for Jacques Ferry is absolutely perfect that both Staines distribute, and Pat Lambie then gave a really nice little simple pop just because he knows somebody's slightly more qualified to finish it outside in. Because Jacques Vallée is genuinely, for this period of time, was one of the best finishers in the world. So,
well, we have that, obviously, the try against the Lions. Try of the year, winning try. Yeah, brilliant finish. And he does basically that again in the corner. At times, this feels a bit like the Springboks playing the hits, doesn't it? A bit, you know, Franstein steps up and does his long-range kick. You have Fourie doing that. You have the Beast kind of crashing over. At one point, he gets that carry for the try, and everyone gets to go, Beast!
Yeah. Here's one. Speaking of the Springboks' greatest hits, there's a bit where Fiji actually win a scrum, funny enough. But the Springboks have them under so much pressure that the Fijian number 8, Matadingo, fumbles it at the back, and Fourie Dupriya then hacks the ball down the sideline.
Yes.
And then he tries to set it up for Spies on his inside by doing like a football-style cross, almost no looker. And like, who else in the world would think to do that?
But, I mean, Fourie Dupriya remains just one of the best players I will ever see.
Yeah.
Like, I say that with confidence, not just one of the best players I've ever seen, will ever see. It'll be a long time before some of his rugby intelligence comes along.
The only player I've also seen do that exact skill before and pull it off was Ruan Pienaar, who was the Springboks bench 9 for this game. Yeah. So,
well, he wasn't. So Ruan Pienaar was the cover 9 with Francois Hugar as the cover 9. Sorry. Francois Hugar was the cover scrum half. Ruan Pienaar was the cover fly half. And Juan de Jong, cover centre, could also play on the wing at a push. Except they then bring Hugar on the wing and Pienaar on at scrum half. So they don't put their scrum half on at scrum half. They put him on the wing.
Yeah.
And they don't put... I don't know. It just...
It confused us down here too, because obviously the depth within South Africa at scrum halves at that time was just remarkable.
Mm.
And if I have to be honest, yeah, I was a bit questioned on... there was a scrum half in Free State Shooters called Sarah Pretorius, who I should have been in this World Cup squad. Because I think he was 2011 Super Rugby Player of the Year, and he was just outstanding. And so the depth within the 9 is just remarkable. And when you've got a guy going back to like Fourie Dupriya, you can literally control a whole game, as we've seen in the past, as we've seen in this World Cup even. The leadership quality, the discipline, he offers so much class. Yeah. And I mean, the great thing with the depth of South African rugby was, you got Francois Hugar, where do we put him? You got Ruan Pienaar, where do we put him? And that for me, like, normally you see Francois go into Hugar, into number 9 position over Ruan. So that also got me a little confused there. But when you go back to Francois Hugar, he played a lot of wing for the Bulls as well because of Fourie Dupriya being the main guy again.
Yeah.
So these guys have had to mix around and change things up.
Yeah.
And again, going back to Ruan Pienaar, I mean, for the Sharks, you had Rory Cocker, Kyle McLeod. You also had quite another depth within the Sharks team. So Pienaar was produced into 10, and that's why Lambie all of a sudden went from 10 to 15. So it's a whole world window. These guys could actually play in different positions.
That's an insane level of depth, isn't it? Rory Cocker obviously went on to become like one of the best players in the top 14 for ages. I think it's criminal that Sarol Pretorius never got a cap.
And, you know, he was always sort of the token. The Barbarians would always take him with them as like one of the best uncapped players.
Yeah.
He was one of my favourite rugby players at that time. And I tweeted it. I think it's got back in my tweets. So where the heck is this guy? Why aren't they just giving him one go? Not even maybe World Cup, just build him in just to see. Because I promise you, if he had played in that gold jersey, something would have happened. Yeah. And he would have been, in my mind, not Fourie Dupriya's level, but probably just behind him and would outrank the other guys, in my opinion. But again, I'm biased. Though I'm not really, because I'm not a Cheetah supporter. I'm a Shark supporter. So either way, should be technically favouring Ruan Pienaar, because I think, or if you've gone overseas. But the depth is madness.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Yeah, but it was after this World Cup that Pienaar signed for Ulster because they were the only club that was offering him a contract at Ascramov. Whereas everyone else was saying, we want to play you as a 10, we want to play you as a fullback, we want to play you as a utility back. Whereas Ulster went, you're a scrum half, you want to play scrum half, we'll sign you. And I remember their press conference, or their press release, rather, when they signed him, said, this is stage one in us trying to become the best rugby club in the world. And that felt hilarious at the time, that they'd signed, that a mid-table Pro 14 team said, we're going to be the best team in the world, and we've signed a player to play out of position. And then actually it kind of worked. Yeah, actually, yeah. He became one of the best signings any European team ever made. And
genuinely, I've seen dozens of times I've supported a Welsh region playing against Ulster. And yeah. Ruan Pienaar always waits till the 80th minute before he knocks over the winning penalty, yeah. Doesn't he?
So I met Ruan Pienaar last
He's
year.
He's done up with the Sharks too.
Yeah. Yeah. I met Ruan Pienaar last year and I made that joke to him. I brought that up to him.
Really?
I said that I've come to refer to anyone scoring a last minute winner as doing a Pienaar.
Yeah.
And he said something like, it's just coincidence that they all happened to fall to me in the last minute. And I was like, yeah, you're being too humble. Shut up and enjoy it. Yeah. And he brought up like the one against the Dragons, the one against the Scarlets. He said, I'll do it a couple of times with the Sharks. You know, they kept coming up.
You said the one against the Dragons and the one against the Scarlets. Which one? Because it happened, I can think of about 10 for each.
Yeah. Because my favourite one was against the Dragons when he kicks a penalty. Then the Dragons get down in like 77 minutes or something. Dragons get downfield from the restart and Jason Tuffy drops a goal to put them back ahead. And then in like the 83rd minute, Pienaar himself drops a goal and wins it.
Yeah.
So he'd won all that game twice in the last 5 minutes.
I'm pretty sure they moved him to 10 specifically so he could drop that goal as well.
Yeah.
Like he started the game at 9 and moved to 10 just so he could drop that goal. Because if it's the last minute kick, Pienaar's going to get it. Doesn't matter where it is, doesn't matter what the score is, whatever. Doesn't matter how you're playing, doesn't matter about your pack. Pienaar's getting that kick.
He's taking it from Francois Steyn's hotel room.
Yes.
You know, the one thing about this, it actually gets me quite a bit, is hearing you guys talk about Ruan Pienaar and all those great things. You know, that news did not travel much back down home in South Africa. When he left, it was quite, I think maybe because at the time SuperSport didn't show the overseas games as much as they do now, thanks to Pro 14 and all that stuff. But, I mean, this is all almost news to us because,
wow.
I mean, yes, we knew he had a great reputation over there. We just didn't see it. So when he came down and got selected, people got irritated because why Pienaar not, for example, me, yeah. I will go and rather at the time have gone for Sara Pretorius going longer in the time, but they kept bringing Pienaar back and that used to frustrate some of us because why Pienaar when you got Sara or even Francois Hogart shining or even Rory Cockett who later went on to go play for France because he never got up his opportunities. So this is very interesting hearing you guys talk about Pienaar because I rated him highly in the Sharks. I thought he was brilliant and I was gutted when he left us. But then it was like, okay, Pienaar, we remember him, but who's this chap? And not only when he comes back to the Cheetahs, then we start remembering and seeing the quick, clever moves that he has to offer. So this is fascinating for me.
And likewise, he's world class. Yeah.
That's really interesting because he is now talked about as one of the best signings a European team ever made.
Yeah.
And
you know, that got me. That's why I went into a pause when you said that one of the best. I thought, really? And then hearing all these things, I'm actually going to go back and find highlights to do this because he was phenomenal. And I think that's a sad thing with a lot of South African players that have gone overseas. We pretty much forget them.
Yeah.
Because unless they really are highly rated in Springboks, because at the time there was that ruling when they needed a certain amount of caps. And Pienaar obviously qualified for that. but we never got to see those moments overseas of what these guys produce. Now we hear about what Fuff is doing with the sale of Sharks of William LaRue for Wasps and all that stuff. So we're hearing it more and more now, I think because of the Pro 14, it's all been brought back. But when you go to even the French leagues, we don't see often much of that. You hear about Colby because Colby's the most talked about thing these days.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to hear that.
And I was then almost surprised when Cobus Reinach got called up by the Springboks because he was brilliant for Northampton last year. He was like, you know, team of the year type performances. And, you know, I think he was the top try scorer in the Premiership last season as well.
I rated him highly, that man. I think he's genius. I was gutted when he left the Sharks. And another guy who almost disappeared off the radar, and I always kept my eye on him, maybe because of the YouTube thing, because I just saw quite a lot of potential in him. And if we had to go back before the World Cup or before Fuff really got onto the shine in 2019, I would have picked Reinach because I just felt he had a bit more to offer. He was quick. He didn't do as much kicking. Or when he did, he would get it right. And then Fuff obviously got better and better and improved, but still had his faults. But Reinach for me was pure quality. But again, once they left he left the Sharks, like you didn't really hear of him. So you can ask mates who passionate South African rugby fans, they couldn't tell you where he is or what he's doing because it's
just fascinating. Yeah.
It's unfortunate we don't get to see as much rugby, or it's not as advertised, like sharing these home guys who we grew up watching or who we watched a lot of rugby, who have now gone overseas to do great things, but yet we forget.
Yeah. And because it doesn't really happen the other way around, really. You know, like, I know I've been... didn't see that much of Lee Halfpenny or Geoffrey Jenkins or whoever when they went to Toulon. I saw a bit of Jonathan Davis at Clermont. But often it does disappear because even if it's on TV still here, it's on different channels. So, you know, if you're paying a subscription to Premier Sports or, you know, whatever to watch the Pro 14 and to watch Europe, you're then going, oh, well, it's on Sky. I've got to pay, you know, more money to watch this.
Good example of that's Rhys Webb, who went to France and we weren't really sure how he was playing and got reports that he wasn't doing that well. And now he's come back into the Wales team and didn't do great in that last Six Nations. So but that's an interesting example.
He left with a great reputation as our best scrum half. And then we recalled him on the basis of that once he was eligible again, once he'd re-signed to rejoin the Ospreys. And suddenly he wasn't playing well. He'd spent too long sat by a pool injured and wasn't on great form. But yeah.
But I mean, even another one on this this topic is Frans Steyn. I mean, we know him because he's a great. But people forgot, what's Frans Steyn doing? I mean, I kept an eye on him because he still did amazing drop goals when he went over to Russia. And long kicks. I think it's one of the top of the furthest kicks in rugby or something like that. And so I could see getting updated, but you never heard that positive media back. It was like, once they're gone, bye-bye. We forget about you. And I think that's the mentality that I've now grown into because I understand it a bit more. Because when these guys go overseas, it's like, stuff you, South Africa, you never hear it from you again. That's the way the media kind of portrayed it down here, in my opinion. It's better now, the past 2-3 years. But you never heard of these guys, the Francis and all that stuff, unless it's stuck here.
Yeah. Well, I think South Africa is one of only South Africa, England, New Zealand have the player pool to do that and have the sheer level of talent.
Yeah.
That, you know, someone like a team like Scotland could never afford to do that because they've only got two professional teams and it's kind of tricky to do. And Wales struggles because even though rugby is a huge cultural thing, it just doesn't have the population and we can't afford to lose two, you know, like once in a generation type athletes. Whereas South Africa almost can because they've got so much strength and depth and they've always had someone who can step up. You know, like you've got, as we mentioned, like Sarah Pretorius, we keep coming back to, is someone who can always perform. And if suddenly you had a bus crash and you lost to broken legs rather than anything more serious, but say South Africa's three most senior scrum halves, he could have come in and done a perfectly good job.
Definitely.
Whereas if Wales did that, you'd be calling someone up from National Division One who, you know, you'd be called, Will, you'd be playing. You'd be in
the line. I would be,
That happened,
Should we go back to the game?
I was thinking, should we touch on VJ?
No.
To be fair, it's interesting. This has been like really a record level of rugby talked about on this podcast. Yeah. It's amazing.
That's fascinating.
I haven't mentioned one foreign language film. Great.
Yet.
So, to touch on the Fiji team, because it's a... I think this Fiji team were far better than I remembered in this game. Just they couldn't finish anything.
Yeah, I think they, for a lot of it, they did an impression of a team who were in the game. Yes. However, that prolonged for longer than I remember it being. I seem to remember for like 10 minutes, they were sort of camped on their own line, but managing to clear decently sort of thing.
Yeah.
But no, they actually made some good breaks and managed to have a few decent opportunities in the South African 22. There's one in particular where Luvanyane chipped it over the top from his own 22. Mm. And I think it was maybe Lumpavalavu did like a half volley into the South African 22 and they turned it over and had a decent opportunity. I think they might have maybe got 3 points out of it, but there was a few opportunities like that, and you think, like, if they had somebody like a Semirendrandra or somebody who could straighten the line, they could have scored, you know?
Yeah. And because they were actually attacking quite well in that first kind of 15 minutes in particular.
Yeah.
And I'd written a joke about 7 minutes in of, like, Fiji have started well, but I remember the final score was obviously, it was close to 50, and just figured, like, maybe they think it's a sevens match, and they give up after 7 minutes. And then actually they kept playing. Whenever they got the ball, they kept chucking it about. They kept doing Fiji things. They did this one pass. My favourite Fiji attack was when they got into the 22 and they did that thing that teams that aren't going anywhere do, where they kind of make and lose the same 5 metres over and over again. And then they twice, once they passed back into the pocket and Gonova stood there and he instead froze like a wide ball. Yeah. And so South Africa kind of think, oh, they're reciting themselves with a drop goal because we're not that far out. You know, range. It's Fiji. It's weird that Fiji are doing drop goals, but fine, we'll watch this. And then minutes later, they do exactly the same thing with Seremaia Bai, who was their goal kicker, stood in the pocket, and instead, no, he dummies a drop goal and tries to run.
And you can tell it was never his plan to actually score the drop goal, was it?
No.
He was always going to run from there.
They probably had a call for fake a drop goal.
Yeah.
And so we're dropping people into the pocket for that.
One thing with this Fiji team that I was impressed with, and and I don't know if it's just because it's a Pacific Island team that is so strong and hard-hitting, is that the penalty level between both teams wasn't too far off. I think South Africa only conceded 7 and Fiji about 10 or 11, and there were no cards. So that there was definitely a more disciplined side from this team opposed to what we've seen maybe in the past or seen in games where, you know, they in a time when South Africa is scoring tries and getting ahead, a hard tackle, just to injure the, not saying they did that intentionally, but you know, with some games of frustrations, they want to just go flatten this guy and we see almost career in injury, but it didn't get to that point, which was also quite nice to see fitting in with how they played the game. And like you said at the start, they're showing moments where they could have done something, scored tries and getting parts of that really was a good thing for me from the Fiji side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think on top of their, they said that the discipline being solid enough, they did kind of, I guess, keep their heads and they kept playing the way they wanted to the entire game. There was no imploding. And maybe if they had, you know, changed things up, they would have worked better or whatever. But they clearly had a way they wanted to play, and that was passing a lot.
Yeah. What shocked me a lot was that the way that they play off 10, they're sort of like, I guess, pod structures, it would have been known back then, wasn't that dissimilar to now?
Like, except without any kind of... nothing to distract.
Nobody out the back or anything like that, which is obviously the key difference. But in terms of the way that they would sort of try and get wide off first and second phase, I think the way that they would progress that is actually quite similar to the way they play now. And sort of the way they stack their forwards and off 10 and stuff, I think was very interesting. But, yeah.
And it is, they have the classic Fiji problem, or classic South Sea Islander in general, because they don't have the systems in place to develop athletes, especially.
Yeah.
They're reliant on, as I said, those kind of once-in-a-generation talents coming along. And every now and again, it is in 2007, and they actually had last year, but they got quite unlucky in A, Ungerer getting injured. No, sorry, not Ungerer.
Yato
getting injured against Australia. And then, obviously, Wales, just that being a really mentally tough team, I managed to pull through. And I think them being... And Uruguay, all 15 players having the game of their lives and just having such heart and soul to it. Whereas that you look at this team, really, there's Nalanga, who was brilliant in the French league, the kind of 2 years leading into this. You had Nakarau at the start of his career, and you had Ungerer. And that's kind of it in terms of Fiji players we still talk about. You know, Matadigo was a very good player, and there's a few of those in there. Gonova, I thought, had a good World Cup, but again, he was coming through, being a sevens player who was only just converting to 15s for this World Cup. Yeah. And he looked kind of raw, even though he looked very talented and very good, and he had a few good touches in this game. It wasn't a Fiji team with the component parts, and they didn't have a figure like Ben Vola Vola or someone who can kind of string it together a bit. Yeah.
I think Nalanga had a really good game, actually. I think he really kept going. And, like, the thing is, I mean, JP Peterson had obviously had a great game for South Africa. Obviously, Nalanga was opposite Undangani, who is a player I have mixed opinions about. But I think Nalanga, that was sort of the one player who got...
Not the only one.
Yeah. I think Nalanga was the one player on the Fiji team who really got the better of his opposite number. And, like, every carry he made was positive. And he had two tries disallowed, of course.
Yeah.
He had a really good game and really kept motoring to the last minute.
Yeah. It was gutting that one great Fiji try from the... I mean, Angera throws a ridiculous 20-metre pass that does go about 20 metres forward.
Yeah.
But it was a great try, and I kind of wanted it being given. Just because of the audacity of Fiji throwing so many offloads and it resulting in a flanker throwing a 20-metre mispass.
Yeah.
I will pick up as well then, if you're on the Fiji side. I enjoyed, so obviously playing against a team that had Foy Dupria and Mornay Steyn, and as mentioned, they've also got Fran Steyn and Pat Lambie in the team. So many kicking options, they're going to kick the ball a lot. And one of my favourite things I discovered in this match was I'd never quite paid attention to it before, but the Kerry Murimurivalu school of fullbacking. Which is that you don't waste any energy until you've got the ball. So he will let the ball bounce to him. He won't run onto it, none of that. He will let the ball bounce over to him, or he will get as close to it as he can and wait.
He stands about 25 yards too deep as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, just
so
exactly.
The ball comes to him. Yeah.
So the ball comes onto him. He can then, the moment he catches it, get immediately up to full speed and pelt at anyone nearby. Sometimes he'll try and step them, but mostly he'll just charge at them and occasionally look like, oh, Nalanga's next to me, I might pass to him. But actually, I'm just going to charge into him.
Should we talk about the one time he tried kicking the ball?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Didn't end well, did it? And the fact was, I mean, he didn't at any point learn that if you run slightly in field, there's less of a chance of this happening. But he just tries putting it up. And genuinely, I think it lands either side of the advertising hoarding in terms of it going out on the full. Like, it was not good. And he looked like he'd never kicked a ball in his life and just kind of looks around like, yeah, I don't know what I was thinking there, lads. Sorry.
Yeah. There's a couple of moments of that for Fiji. There's a couple of moments of just players throwing passes that weren't on or trying kicks and just being like, sorry, I don't know why I just did that. That was just, something came over me. Sorry, lads. Not sure what that was about.
This is probably a good way to come on to somebody not known for kicking, who actually did a pretty good job, Heinrich Brosseau.
Yes!
That try for Fran Steyn. Let's talk about that.
Yes! It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. Something looks wrong about it, but it's so perfectly placed for Fran Steyn to run onto. Like, if he passed the ball to him, Fran Steyn wouldn't have had the space to run into, you know? He perfectly places that, and then Steyn finishes it well, stepping the fullback.
That guy, oh man. It's a hot topic on Heinrich because he's just so damn talented. And I feel he could have had so much more for South Africa going forward.
Yeah.
So even reminiscing, going to see class moves from him like that and other sparky moments that he's had to offer, it just, as a South African, I just wish the man didn't get so many injuries.
Yeah.
I think he could have been regarded as one of the greats within some Springbok rugby. And just doing something like that, having the mind thought to think at a moment and working so well, while they're not going for that, you get that actual try. It's just remarkable.
Yeah. It's just his strength over the ball on both sides as well. Just his ability to turn it over, because he's very much in that mould of Pocock, Warburton and McCaw, of that kind of like insane shoulders and quite tall and able to just kind of like bend over but withstand hit after hit on his body. But also,
Richie McCaw went on saying that he's petrified of the man, if I'm not mistaken. It's the one Springbok we're actually scared of, because of just the brute strength that this guy has to offer, and like you say, how he can steal the ball and do remarkable things. Just pure class.
I remember him saying he was in the top. Like, he made a list of like the five best flankers he ever played against.
Yes, it was that one. Not really scared. It was the top. Yeah,
and I think it was him second to Dusatoir or something, because Dusatoir was just lucky in that he always caught the All Blacks on a bad day.
The one player apart always from outplayed McCaw. Yeah.
And didn't sweat, apparently, like Prince Charles. Prince Andrew, whatever. Prince Charles, yeah. Heinrich Brosseau, I thought, was excellent and so key in... There were enough times, you know, Angera being Fiji's best player on that team at open side was a really good jackaler, and he got nothing all day because you had Brosseau and Berger just charging into them when they weren't putting in little chip kicks and doing floated passes.
It's a great Fijian back row as well. Wangani Barotu is still known as Fiji's probably prime poacher in 2019. Yeah. Matadingo, who we've touched on already, incredibly rangy, athletic number eight. Like, it's a good back row, and they were completely anonymous, thanks to the South African back row, who just completely dominated them all game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should we talk about Mornay Steyn's try as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, which, again, came from Brousseau offloading to him on, like, a hard carry, and it was just a one-on-one. He might have even been one-on-two. He might have had two people marking him. He still manages to get two hands free, offload over the top of Mornay Steyn, who's, frankly, Mornay Steyn's running game is so underrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People remember him as this just kicking fly half, but there was so much more to
it. So much to his game.
Yeah. And you look at the try the beast finishes, where he goes, throws a dummy, goes straight through, manages to get the offload in. And some of his distribution, you know, in the lead up to the... He throws a great pass in the lead up to the Jacques Ferry try. He was excellent. He had an all proper all-round game.
You're actually 100% spot on. And when you think of Mornay, it is the kicking side. I don't know if it goes back to the Nasporter days. And people didn't always acknowledge the skill that the man actually has all-round. Mm. And he definitely showed it there. So it's a good, when you reminisce and go back, because I mean, obviously you have certain thoughts and opinions of different players of how they've been rated and all that stuff. Mornay would always be looked to, but going back there, it definitely shows the class that the man has to offer. And many other games, he's done it as well. But yeah, I think it's just always a tough one when you're the kicker and you're reliant on getting those 3 points or those 2 points. And I think that takes away so much of the authority of these guys in the game.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. My one other thing I've got just jotted down is a couple of points on the South African coaching box, because there's the very familiar face sat to one side of it of Mr. Johan Razi Erasmus, who a few times they mention, and it does get you wondering a bit, like, how big an influence do you think he had? How much of them doing these things do you think were actually Razi?
I think that's the thing. And if we go back to the Springboks under Peter de Villiers and all that stuff, I always said it's the team that he's got in the background. I mean, Razi was known for transforming a Cheetahs team into a Curry Cup winning team, which they hadn't done in God knows how long. And the famous stuff, going on the roof, waving his flag, I mean, all his signs. I mean, that was the highlight. It's like, what the hell is Razi doing? And then, like you said, going into that coaching staff, it's just remarkable what he did. And I think he had a major, major influence in that squad, if you look at where we are now. I mean, I know Kutsia was there too, but I mean, he did his one or two things that worked for the Springboks, but not many did, actually. But then there was also Dick Muir, who I think a lot of people tend to forget about. I mean, he's also transformed a few parts there. And I think the team that de Villiers had was remarkable. So I agree. Razi, I think, had a pure point. And I mean, he's a key, quick off topic, into helping to try and reform the Southern Kings that have just gone down in the in the dumps down here. So now, it's and it always goes back to Razi said, how's this? I really feel... it did have a part in the strong developing moments there.
Yeah, and I think he's someone who has this just completely innate rugby understanding. I was got the same thing from Warren Gatland. And there's a handful of coaches you look at and you're like, I trust you completely.
And a lot of it's down to the fact that no matter how much the game changes, they'll go along with it. Like Eddie Jones is one of those, for example. Like he's coached through seven different eras of rugby and kept up with it and innovated himself rather than just keeping up with it.
It's funny, look at that 2007 Springbok team that, I don't know if you remember this, Gareth, as well, won the World Cup. but they had, behind Jake White, he had, as assistant coaches, both Eddie Jones and Razi Erasmus, who go on to be the lead coaches, the head coaches, for the 2019 final.
Hell of a lot of sport acts, that is.
Yeah.
I mean, Eddie Jones was a big talk about in 2007. And even my dad, I mean, I was a lot younger there. But it was one of the talking points is the influence of who was behind Jake White's team to give him that boost, because Jake was phenomenal and his World Cup winning coach. But he also had his tendencies to favour certain players that might have not been right. Like we go back, Jaco van der Westhuizen, not really rated very well here. And he was the fly off at times. But the support team, it just shows the power behind and going back, Eddie Jones and Igor Rassi. I mean, and now where we are, like you say, to the finals.
Yeah.
It's just remarkable.
Yeah. I also, you mentioned Dick Moore briefly. I just enjoy the fact that their predecessor to Wanky Stick was Dick Moore.
I was thinking this,
and we can
yeah.
we can move on from that very quickly. but yes, so I believe with that, I will use that as the best segue possible to move on to Dick of the Day.
Dick Moore of,
Dick
the,
Moore
day.
Of yeah. the Day, yes. Will, do you want to begin? Do you want to kick us off?
Sure.
Dick
okay.
us off. No,
got a couple of nominations. One of them was Martin Gillingham. Firstly, for not mentioning Nottingham, which he's done on every
yes.
other game he's commentated on.
Yeah.
He's not found a segue to mention Nottingham.
Well, I went to try and check. It was definitely Martin Gillingham because it's the first time he hasn't mentioned Nottingham in a game.
Part of his job.
And it's not like it was just because it wasn't relevant.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
He also mispronounced Nakarawa's name, which is like, oh, you're going to regret that soon, aren't you? He's like, oh, Nakarawa? Like that. It's like, oh, you will have reason to hear of this guy. Trust me. Another one was Nimi Kanetale for box kicking into Deacon Manu's back at one point, and it just kind of bobbling about the place, and everyone going, huh? What's happening there? I'm going to give it to Napoleone Langer for the fact that there's two try scoring opportunities he had. One of them was the one with Ngera's pass you were on about, mm-hmm. and one of them where he just picks the ball up from the 22, and he goes miles with JP Peterson on his back. JP Peterson, very strong man, and he manages to ground JP Peterson, but not the ball. So, for that purpose, I'm going to give it to Napoleone Langer.
Okay. Never mind the two disallowed tries.
Yeah.
Which, you know, also factors. So, my thought, right, I had, a few contenders, a couple of which you touched on there. However, for me, there were two contenders, one of which was the guy that put the reverse angle thing up on the TV coverage, because it kept coming up when there wasn't a reverse angle. And a few times, the moment a try was scored, it would just come up saying, reverse angle, and it'd still be the player celebrating before the reverse angle came up. It's like, you're very eager to show us a reverse angle. And why do we even need to know it's a reverse angle? We can work that out. We can look at it and go, oh, that must be the reverse angle.
Yeah.
But instead, he really wants us to know that it is the reverse angle. So he was a contender. But my dick of the day was, and again, he's in contention with Man of the Match to me, but Yanni Duplessis. For at one point, the ball is loose on the ground, and he becomes, I think, the only player in this World Cup, and possibly any World Cup, to ever nutmeg himself.
What?
So he goes to kind of like to hack the ball forward to try and like properly boot it. It just catches the outside of his foot, and instead it kind of bobbles an inch forward, and he runs over it, then looks down and sees the ball's gone between his own legs.
I had him with one of mine too.
So,
yeah.
Gareth, so do you have any contenders? Anyone for Dick of the Day for you?
Yeah, it was one for the exact reason you had, but the South African commentary, I wanted to put them on the spot. They were just blinking, driving me mad at the way. I don't know if you forgot back at certain highlights of that. Mm-hmm. I just find the South African commentary very arrogant and so biased towards South Africa. And that's one thing I couldn't stand. And it was one of the points that came across. Like, if we go back to Fiji actually showing quite a bit of potential at the start where they could have done things. There was no credit given to them.
Right.
And that always comes as a highlight to me. So my dick of the day are the commentators.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay. I like that. Nicely done. And shall we move on to the man of the match?
Sure. Shall I start on this as well?
Yeah, let's go the same order.
Sure. I think Jake Peterson, as I say, had a great game. I think came off his win quite a lot. He's such a strong man as well. And to say that they had no Habana in this game and he did enough work for the both of them. Like, he was great. Mornay Steyn, as I say, like, controls the game brilliantly, runs brilliantly. I think I've got to give it to Scott Berger in the way that he won so many turnovers, carried so hard, distributed. There was nothing he didn't do. Like, he's such a good player.
Yeah. I'm doing exactly the same thing. Scott Berger is, for me, the clear man of the match.
Scott, too.
Yeah. Oh!
Unanimous.
His story.
Second week in a row.
Didn't
happen for the first how many ever episodes, then it's happened twice in a row. Unanimous man of the match. Yeah.
Yeah.
After Amorosino last week, now Scott Berger.
You know, it's funny about that. We all select Skalky. I mean, we spoke briefly about him, but interesting how we end off with that. But yet he wasn't. I mean, we did a lot about stains and all that stuff. So we just need to finish off on Scott. But I fully agree. And when I thought about it, I thought I was also on the lines of Mornay or even France or even Brissot just for those moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I thought Skulk for me is just, I've always regarded him as a legend in the game, especially after his injury and all that jazz. I rate him on you.
Yeah, so I too. Brissot was very much in contention for me as well. But
it's quite telling when we've mentioned Sarah Pretorius more than mentioned our actual match. Even mentioned Jason Tubby.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of the kind of player he was, that he did all of the quiet donkey work no one else wanted to do, whilst also having those kind of blonde highlights so that it really showed whenever he did anything more flashy.
Yeah.
He carried really hard.
No, it was Skulk. It's like you either loved him or people just didn't like him, which I could never understand. My best mate, schoolmate, well, still mate today, his father couldn't stand Skulk. And I always like punted him and right to the guy, but certain people just either liked or didn't like him. Probably thought he was too quick or going bashing out people. Like with the we always know him as the locks, like what we took of Fuck. It was Skulk in back in the day with those stuff. So for me, he's just a king.
Yeah, absolutely. Yoni Duplessis was the other guy I thought was pretty outstanding. I thought the scrum, he played 80 minutes, which, you know, these days is very rare for a prop, but to be doing that and then in the 80th minute be really smashing and turning over a scrum like that, having also beaten four defenders in a run where you sidestep two people. Any prop that can do that for me is in contention man of the match. But yeah, I think Berger stood...
Three strong prop performances from South Africa.
Yeah. Speaking of prop performances, I just want to quickly throw up something I meant to say at the beginning. I meant to kick off on this, but instead we'll finish on it. So, in the pre-match press conference, Dika Manu, who was Fiji's captain at this World Cup, made the following opening remark when asked about playing for Fiji. He began by talking about what we lack in resources we make up for in talent. And then he said, "The fields we train on in Fiji are littered with frogs. They are an eye-opener, even for someone like me. You're rarely able to use a full pitch. There are so many frogs. Most of the time, you have to make do with a 22. And coming to New Zealand, it was such a contrast that most of these guys wanted to sleep on the grass we trained on."
What?
Yep. The pitch had so many frogs they couldn't train on it.
That's incredible.
The late contender for Dick of the Day is all of those frogs.
All of the frogs.
Paul McCartney for organising the frog choir on the pitch.
Before we finish, there is one last thing that I would like to talk about. Because just waxing lyrical about how good Skulk Berger was there, every time I hear somebody do it, it reminds me of this great interview with a man called Constant Beckerling.
Captain Constant Beckerling. Constant, talk us through those 80 minutes. No, we prepared to win. We knew that we were here to make history. The whole week, that's what we told ourselves. And you know what? I'm so proud of the boys. Absolutely humbled. And the guys came out, they played with enormous testicles, and we absolutely did it. Fantastic effort. I'm such a happy captain. It's 2 weeks for you guys, 2 wins for you guys on the trot. Where to from here for the Wits team? Well, it's head down, building. We've got a lot of games still to win. We're a lot of brave boys, and let's go shake this tournament up. Now, we've got a question for you coming off of Twitter. It comes from @McGregor_Nicholas. You worked yourself like a Trojan horse. Who is your Springbok hero that helps you move the way that you do? I would say it was Skulk Berger, absolute hard man, tough as nails, and a big brain to boot. Humble guy, what a fighter. Just the same as you are bringing up your career.
Yeah, there's Constant Beckerling.
That is
Skulk Berger.
The best summary of Skulk Berger we've had, and he talked about it more in his post-match interview than we did in an hour on a game where he was outstanding.
Yeah.
Good.
That is one of the all-time great interviews, alongside, you know, Gamonara, alongside Khaleesi after the finals last year, and Constant Beckerling. Okay. On that note, Gareth, thank you very much for joining us. Where can people find you for, you know, the YouTube and so on?
Just YouTube, Gareth Mason, or walking towards you, man. You'll see me pop up there.
Brilliant. It's worth, I think.
Thanks for having me.
Watching your live stream of the final, just in that. I love watching people be excited and happy about, you know, about
the one that the Springboks won.
Yeah.
Springboks won that final, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't know, go find out by checking out Gareth Mason's channel.
But yeah, if you've ever wanted to see something just so... I can't even find the words. There aren't words. You just someone explode with joy in that way is wonderful.
I'm normally like that quite in general. So it wasn't just the camera. That was me, real life. And I probably was being nicer for camera because I'm harsher to a referee, and that side hasn't come out yet on a stream. So maybe stay tuned. You might see it come out if we have another Bryce Lawrence experience.
I was going to say, we'll make sure we don't get you on the episode with Bryce Lawrence. We'll in case you'll explode.
Oh, I could have a lot to talk about there. We'll be here for hours.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining
coming
us.
On, man.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you next time for Ireland against Australia, where we will be joined, all being well, by Tom from the Free Red Kings. That's something to look forward to. Thank you once again, Gareth. Thank you once again, William, whoever you are. And thank you for listening. Good night.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.